Look down at your hands, your knees, in my case, my left wrist. Everyone's got a scar somewhere and a story to go with it. And though the mark may be permanent, the meaning behind scars can evolve, and with it, the lives of the people who bear them. I'm Pauline Dakin. Welcome back to a new season of Maritime Magazine. Our show this morning is about scars and how they affect people's lives. Two people in particular, Deborah Ward and Sarah Senakovich. But first, a word of warning. This story contains strong language and pretty dramatic situations. We really don't recommend it for kids. Here now is Leslie Lowe's documentary, Sight Unseen.
Well, my scars are 50 years old. When I first came out, they were very red and stood up.
These scars may be half a century old.
Over the years, they have flattened.
But the memory of them has far from faded.
Have faded in color, not flesh tone. I mean, you certainly can still see them. Okay.
I'll get you to introduce yourself to start.
Hi, my name is Deborah Ward, and I am a burn survivor.
And how old are you?
Now we're getting personal. 57. Actually, no, I just turned 58 this month.
Deborah's what's called a hidden burn.
My stomach looks like bubble wrap. So,
with pants and long-sleeved shirt, you'd never know about her childhood accident at a former Dartmouth military base.
My legs, like I said, the thighs, they're quite heavily burned. I've had a lot of releases and that in there. I have one particular scar that I tell the kids it's my shark bite because of the way they had to cut the skin. So when you have a kid in the doctor's office and I'm in shorts, you know, it usually holds their attention. So.
So it was your knees to your chin?
Knees right up to my chin.
Can you tell me the story?
We were living in Shannon Park and had come home for lunch from school. I was 7 years old. And a neighbor came to the door, which was not uncommon back then for neighbors to borrow off of one another. And she had come to borrow some sugar. And I knew the cup was in a cupboard above the stove. And I pushed a chair over to the stove to get into the cupboard and didn't know the burner was on, and I had a dress on. Dress was heavily starched, and within seconds, the flames were over my head. My mother panicked, ran me across the hall, which fueled the fire, and then I was rolled in a carpet to get the fire out. So, but by then, like I said, I'm burned from my knees right up to my chin. All third-degree burns.
Deborah remembers more of the accident than she'd like to.
I remember the fire department coming in after everything was out. I remember my mother running back and forth in the apartment looking for the ambulance. It took the ambulance 45 minutes to get to me. I remember them taking me in the ambulance and telling them that I was very hot and very tired. And that the siren, I asked them to turn the siren off because it was bugging me. And apparently that's quite common from what I can understand. I guess that's your body going into shock, and the noise is quite loud. I remember about, 10 to 15 doctors and nurses all being around me. Couldn't figure out why they had a black sheet on me, only to find out down the road that that wasn't a sheet, that was my skin. The last thing I remember at that particular point was the doctor saying to the team, were they ready? And it was lights out for me.
And I didn't have any shoes on at this point because my shoes got flew off in the car. And so we get to this trailer and we go inside. And people are talking about how, like, the driver's going to go to jail and blah, 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 and, like, how he's so worried. And then I think, okay, so whatever, I need to go pee. So I go into the washroom, and I look at myself in the mirror, And I'm like, oh gosh, this is terrible. And what I see is just my neck gaping open.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
It's a day off for 25-year-old Sarah Senikovitz.
Nothing too much. Just cleaning up a little bit. Okay. This is our house.
Let me see your scars.
Oh, geez. Yeah, okay. Well, they're here. They're all along my neck. And there's kind of like two sort of stripes and then this like big one that starts like basically just... We're almost at my jugular, like all across from, I don't know what this part of, what is this part of here?
I think it's called your mandible, that pointy bit at the bottom of your jaw right there.
From there to there is sort of, that's the biggest one, and then there's a few lower below it.
Sarah's accident happened 9 years ago, on the eve of her 16th birthday.
It was sort of like a really terrible time in my life and my family, and so I started acting out really abrasively and was really rebellious. And at that time, my parents were very, like, pretty selfish people and, like, really thinking about themselves, and they weren't really paying attention to me. And so I was acting out, and I was started dating this person and sneaking out of the house late at night and then coming back in the morning and then going to school, and that was sort of like one of those ways that I was acting out. And this person that I was dating...
Late one night, she arrives at her boyfriend's
and
finds him with a friend who's borrowed a car without permission.
And there's this massive hill that kind of goes up out of the town, which is Cranbrook, BC. And this person started just, like, hitting the gas really, really hard. And,
like, you should really slow down.
I was like, no, I'm fine. And then we start going down the hill. He totally loses control.
The car goes up in the air and
flips three times into a swamp. My only reaction was this very blasé, like, fuck. And then I woke up, and the car was on its side, and someone was underneath me. And I was, and there was, like, some, I think a couple of people had already climbed out of the front part, so I had to climb out. And I remember the person who was below me was like, stop bleeding on me, or something to that effect, like, you're bleeding on me, get off of me.
Instead of heading to the nearest house and calling an ambulance, they abandon the car and they start walking. Sarah wonders if she's all right. She knows she's barefoot. She knows she's losing blood. No one ever mentions her neck. No one even asks her if she's okay.
We get into the hospital and then, you know, then they bring out a wheelchair because obviously I shouldn't be standing, and they take me into ICU for 2 weeks, and I get major surgery, and there's like a whole bunch of glass and metal in my neck, and I got 140 stitches.
One here,
so right there.
One there.
Yeah. Oh, I can see it.
Gotcha. I stick down and then the other one here.
Okay. Yeah.
But I have. Grafts right across
right.
here,
yeah.
Which I can't show.
Yeah, sure.
But I said I have more patches on me than quilt. So.
Deborah doesn't have a number to represent the severity of her scars, unless it's the surgeries she's had to have.
I lost count.
And she's lost count of those.
With being burned as a child, as you grow, your skin grows with you, and of course, burned skin doesn't stretch, so you end up going in and having skin grafts put in, or what they call Z-plasties or releases. This one arm, for example, I have 1, 2, 3, 4 skin grafts in it, and I've had about 5 releases just to get the mobility to be able to use it.
In the hospital, Deborah had to relearn how to walk. Later, when she was pregnant, the skin on her hips would stretch so far it would literally tear open. And the physical pain was only one part of learning to deal with her scars.
Kids are cruel, as we all know. I went through a lot of hateful remarks and made fun of a lot. some parents kept their kids away from me because they didn't know. Being military-based, people come and go all the time. And they had no idea what was wrong with me. And so just automatically assumed it was a disease and told their kids that they had to stay away from me. You know, my mother was confronted one time as to why she allowed her diseased child out with other kids. So it was quite rough. Growing up, I learned to avoid my mother because she couldn't handle what was going on with me, didn't know what to do. Neighbors in Shannon Park helped out a lot. One lady in particular took over healing everything itches. So the itching is very bad, and one of the ways to control it was baking soda bath. And this lady took over that. She would bribe me with homemade milkshakes to come and take my bath. And then when we moved here to Sackville, I thought it was going to be a new chapter, that things would start over. But my junior high years were the most horrible years of my life in school. And that's when I found out that people really do base their opinion of you by what you wear and what you have and what you can do. It pretty well started there that I would never have a boyfriend or I'd never get married or whatever because I was just too ugly. My skin was ugly. I looked ugly. My one experience of trying to wear a bathing suit and fit in with everybody else turned into a disaster, and I was the brunt of a lot of jokes. I've never put a bathing suit on since.
Deborah married young the first time. She says she jumped at the chance because she thought no one would ever want her. Now she's on her third marriage.
I think my scars represent a lost youth. Because at 7 years old, the child all of a sudden had to become a fighter. And so I lost a lot of my childhood. So for me, that's a tragedy in itself. And so I struggled when my kids were little because I could never figure out how come I didn't know how to play with my kids. I didn't know how to play with my kids because I had lost my childhood. I never had those games that the kids played. So for me, it represents a bit of a loss.
Yeah, I went back to my life. I went back to school. I remember from that point onward, like, before that, I was definitely asking for, like, death and for sort of bad things to happen just because I felt really negatively and out of control with the rest of my life. And then I just remember when I was healing in my bed, like, my parents' room was above mine. And their roof was sort of falling in a bit, and they had to get it fixed. And I just kept getting so totally concerned that the roof was going to fall in on me and that I was going to die. And then at that point, I was like, oh, I really don't want to die. And that was sort of the changing point of, like, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I need to sort of start taking care of myself if nobody else is. From that point onward, my father tried to convince me that it was a good idea to sue these people and to, like, you know, try and get some money and whatever. And I just, the whole time, I just kind of was like, this is my decision. Like, I was out searching for this pain, and so I should just, you know, grin and bear it.
Sometimes if I see somebody staring, I just look at them and I'll go, I was burned in a fire and I survived, and smile and keep on going. If it's hot and in our summers or we're somewhere, then I will put shorts and a short sleeve shirt on. But there's always a sweater somewhere very close by. Yes, I keep them hidden a lot.
Sarah never did. Her dad encouraged her to consider plastic surgery. The boyfriend, too.
That boyfriend who's in the car with me, I remember this one time at his house, like later on, you know, asking if I was going to get plastic surgery. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I'm going to get rid of it or not. And he's like, I really think you should. And that burning memory in my head has always, you know, made me think like, well, what the fuck do I care about what you think of beauty? Like, learning a lesson is just as beautiful as having a perfect neck. Like, and I don't want you in my life anymore. Like, what kind of a person are you if you really think that that's the first thing that you should do? I have all these scars on my neck, and that's fine. And I'm going to find somebody who loves them and loves me. So, screw off. I think it's hard for people to talk about traumatic experiences in their life, you know, and I think that seeing a scar makes people remember that shitty things happen in life. But, like, I don't think that that would ever be what I would, or the thing that I would talk about with my scar. I wouldn't think, oh, like, this was this terrible part of my life. It's like, no, this was, like, a big moment of change.
For Sarah, it was a change. A move away from self-destruction. It was a way to seeing a future, to finishing school and leaving the boyfriend, and moving forward. Deborah had her own change, too. After decades of thinking she was the only one with these scars, she was invited to a burn survivor's camp.
And my first instinct when I walked in was to run. I went back to my car because all of a sudden I was in this room with all these other survivors when I had gone all this time thinking that I was alone. And I did stay, and we talked and found out that just about everybody was on the same page. Like, when they had walked in, they wanted to leave because there was nothing out there for us, for anybody to connect.
She started going to burn conferences and support meetings.
And it wasn't until I went to a conference that they showed a video of a young girl that was burned at 7. And in 5 seconds flat, I had unblocked everything that I had blocked. And I just did a total breakdown at this conference, and that was the door that needed to be open for me to see that I was my own destruction.
Now she volunteers, visiting new burn victims, working in schools with the Justice Department. She says in 10 years, she's gone from victim to survivor to being, as she puts it, out there.
If somebody had told me back when I got burned that I'd be an advocate for burn support, I would have laughed at them. But I have discovered that there's a big need out there for other survivors to be able to talk to somebody that's been there. And basically that's what I do now. Would I change it? Probably not. I would love to be, I just once like to see myself not burned. But I don't think I would change anything. I've met people that without this injury I would never have met, I would never have crossed paths with. And so I think my answer would be no, I wouldn't change anything now. When I did an awareness at the elementary school, I had a primary class. And with the primaries, I read them a book. It's called No Teeth for Dragons. And when it was all done, one little child came up to me and said, "Did you die?" And I looked at him and I said, "Not this time."
It's like, you know, erase it, start over. You can't, and like you shouldn't erase your experiences. So I guess that like, that's why I kept it. Like, why would I get rid of something that was so important and so life-changing? And I don't know, I guess maybe it's intimidating to people, but it it shouldn't be.
Our documentary this morning, Sight Unseen, was by Leslie Lowe, and she's here with me now. Hi, Leslie.
Hi.
Fascinating stories, but I'm curious, what made you want to tell them?
Well, we're sitting together in the studio. You're
yes.
beside me. Do you see it?
You have a scar.
I do, on my neck. The majority of it you can't see, since I am wearing a shirt in the studio today. But I was 8 months old. I was crawling across the kitchen floor, and a pot full of boiling water landed on me.
Oh, you know what? I've known you for a long time. I've never even noticed it.
Well, you know what? Even people who do notice it hardly ever ask me about it. And that's really why I wanted to seek out the stories of people with scars, because scars are both visible and they're invisible.
What do you mean?
Well, the people who have scars see them in the mirror every day, but they see them the same way, you know, you might see your eyebrows or your nose. They look at them, but they don't really see them. And for strangers, it's kind of the same. They see people's scars, but it's really rare for anyone to ask the stories behind them. So in that sense, too, they're invisible. So I want you to listen to this clip.
A handful of people will ask what it is, and I don't mind when people ask. I actually prefer that. At least I can explain myself. But yeah, most of the time, people just kind of stare, and that's about it, yeah.
So Pauline, that's Kathleen Darling, and she has a pretty striking scar. It's a dime-sized purplish circle dead center on her sternum with a dent in the middle of it. And the story's pretty striking, too. She got the scar in utero when a doctor punctured her with an amniocentesis needle.
Wow. So, Leslie, why don't people ask about the stories behind scars? Because obviously there are some pretty dramatic ones.
Yeah, it's true. You know what? I don't know. Both Sarah and Deborah in the doc thought that people were scared of asking about something potentially painful, and painful in an emotional sense. Because if you think about it, no one pretends somebody doesn't have a broken leg. They ask, oh, what happened? Kathleen says it's a bit annoying that people don't ask.
I don't know. I guess I just wish they would acknowledge the elephant in the room kind of thing. Because, you know, I'm aware it's there, they're aware it's there. So I guess for me to just kind of educate them on what it is I find kind of satisfying, I guess, in a way. Yeah.
So she's not at all self-conscious about her scar?
She used to be. She told me a story that she remembers being at a swimming pool as a child and trying to pull up her bathing suit to hide her scar from kids' stares. Mm-hmm. But when she turned 16, that totally changed.
I don't know. I guess it's just part of my self-identity, and it always has been. So I just, instead of being self-conscious about it, I kind of chose to be more proud of it and just happy that it is a part of me and happy that, I didn't have it on my forehead or I have no nose or, no eye or something. Yeah.
Interesting. Leslie, how do you feel about your scar?
I fall into the Kathleen camp. I've had my scars ever since I can remember. They are as extensive as Deborah's. They don't represent a time or a choice or an experience for me the way Sarah's scars do. They're just there.
And you never had bad experiences around it?
Certainly nothing like Deborah's. Lots of staring as a child, some rumors about how they got there, but nothing that really affected me deeply.
So let me ask, would you get rid of the scar if you could?
I don't know the answer, and you got me there because that's exactly what I asked Deborah and Sarah. Would you get rid of them? And they had as hard a time answering as I am. It's hard.
And also, could you get rid of the scar if you decided you wanted to?
Well, no, actually. There's this real all or nothing idea about scars. So I think there's a common feeling that if people with scars just went to see plastic surgeons, then they could take them away. And I put that to Dr. Stephen Morris, who's a surgeon. He specializes in plastic and reconstructive surgery in Halifax, and he treats patients like Deborah.
I think so. I think it's probably a common misconception that the scar can be removed, whereas the reality is that we can't remove the scar. We can modify it and hopefully improve it. And sometimes we can't improve it. Sometimes it's a laceration that was repaired perfectly. The scar is the scar. I couldn't make it better if I tried, and I don't waste the person's time by trying. But yeah, that's a common misconception. Patients often will come in thinking that they're going to have the scar removed, and we have to explain that once the damage has gone right through the full thickness of the skin and Mother Nature's healed the wound, then it's basically collagen fibrils that are bridging the gap, and it's a permanent thing, and the scar is there, much like tattoos.
But with so-called traumatic scars, that's like getting a tattoo you never chose in a place you might never want one. And that analogy sort of explains how difficult the emotional side of coming to terms with scars can be, as we heard from Deborah in the documentary.
And a burn injury is a really big emotional roller coaster. And not only the patient's having a potentially fatal injury, that they're also having lifelong limitations to their function. So either they're not able to do the things that they used to do, or they have difficulty or impairment in a lot of the physical activities that they were doing. So yes, it's a huge impact on their lives.
So it's a journey, mm-hmm. and it's a lot of change.
But in general, all scars will improve over time, in general. And so the scars will fade. And I think that also applies to the emotional content of the injury, so that the trauma that produced the scar is upsetting to the person, as is the thick red scar immediately after the injury. And then as the scar fades and as the memory of the incident fades, the person is able to adapt or at least accept a little bit better over time.
But you know, Pauline, for some people like Deborah, that can take a very, very long time.
I can imagine. Mm. Leslie, thanks for bringing us such interesting stories this morning.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Leslie Lowe is a freelance reporter in Halifax. Now, we've heard these four scar stories. We'd like to hear yours as well. Here's how to do it. Leave us a message at 1-800-565-5463 or email us at marmag@cbc.ca or drop by our website where you can hear the story again if you like, plus many more, and leave your comments there. I'm Pauline Dakin. That's it for Maritime Magazine this week. For Christina Harnett and me, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again next Sunday.